Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. It's hour number three of the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan. Eric Nadel is coming up at 4:40. Rangers pregame at 5:30. Offense looking pretty good last night, and tonight, nasty Nathan Eovaldi. It's amongst the subjects we'll have for Nadel here coming up at 4:40. Here's your Woolly Bully with his fix.
Let's get our fix right after this.
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir.
Wrong side!
Left side!
Wrong side!
Left side!
I use these for acid indigestion.
So what are we going to use these for?
Intimidation.
You know I got to get my fix, man.
The Canadian Football League will not, capital N-O-T, permit any of its teams to sign Brendan Sorsby in 2026. Quote, the allegations involving Brendan are serious and concerning.
Who's this?
The Canadian Football League.
The CFL,
League.
They're out. Okay.
They're done-ski with him, at least for this year. At this time, the Canadian Football League will not register a contract for him, and no team will be permitted to add him to its negotiation list. So, Brendan, this is what you're going to have to do. Just sit out the year.
Is the XFL still around?
This is the XFL.
UFL.
Yeah, it's the UFL. They just finished their season.
Yeah.
So their new season wouldn't even start until like right around the next NFL draft.
Yeah.
So for him, it's you're sitting out the year.
He's sitting out the year.
And then you go through the whole process of you do your pro day, you hopefully get a combine invite, and you just try and prove to the league that you have taken accountability and responsibility for what's happened. You've made changes. You've put yourself and surrounded yourself with good people. And maybe you get an opportunity to be in the NFL next year. But this is clearly a punishment now from all of the major football leagues that they're like, dude, we're not taking any part of your services this year.
Yeah, I think you go on a speaking tour, talking to kids about the dangers of gambling on your own sport.
Make some money.
You know, you can.
Or I can put them on.
Charge a fat fee.
Or I can put them on Crown.
Here's my fee.
I can put them on Crown and he can have a gambling podcast.
There you go.
That's what we can do. Yeah.
He can help out with Prize Picks.
That would be awesome content. A Brendan Sorsby handicapping
local
show.
Local guy, dude. You should reach out to him, Brian. That'd be amazing.
That could be the pivot, like big picture.
Yes.
If the football stuff goes by the wayside. Like. But he's also kind of the not, you know, the what not to do gambler. He was betting money line Indiana in 2022.
We got July 4th coming up quickly here. I wonder if he's going to be betting on that hot dog contest again.
I mean, listen.
He's got the itch. You got to scratch
it. I'm putting all the wood on Joey Jaws.
As you should. As you should. Even with the allegations against him this year, he's still participating. And he's still probably going to
slap somebody.
No big deal. It was more of a mush than a slap, right? Did we see the video?
I didn't see the video, but...
Congratulations are in order for our guy, Brandon Aubrey. Him and his wife, Jen, have announced the birth of their baby boy. That happened yesterday. So congratulations, future highest paid kicker in the NFL, Brandon Aubrey's kid. He's going to follow in his dad's footsteps. I can't wait. In 20 years, we'll have the next Aubrey kicking for the Cowboys.
Butter 2.0.
Yep.
By then, we'll be kicking like 90-yard field goals.
The cyborg leg.
Yeah.
It's just a thing. We did get the official draft date set for D.C. next year, April 29th to May 1st. So don't take any time off. That will be the next NFL draft from Washington, D.C.
Getting later and later.
It's going to be – we had 805,000 fans across the 3 days in Pittsburgh.
Get ready for June 1st through the 3rd. Yeah.
Be one of those. Maybe. Yeah. Would you rather them move it up or – I mean – do you like it where it is?
Move it up.
Yeah.
I would rather the draft before free agency.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
It'd be kind of fun.
NFL Players Association will never agree to that.
No.
Yeah.
Well, because it creates more demand for the players already in the league?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You want your veteran players to get the opportunity, first crack at it with these teams before they, you know, draft the player that is going to actually end up taking your spot, and now you're a free agent, and the team that needed the linebacker doesn't want you anymore because they already drafted theirs. In free agency, it's like, well, we don't know if we're going to be able to draft a linebacker, so let's sign this guy.
Right.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah, and then you're trying to get the most money possible. I understand. Now, George Kittle is amongst the latest of players that are trying to push the NFLPA and the league to go to the natural grass surfaces. He said, today we've made it clear that we prefer grass fields. We know it's better on our bodies, and clearly we know it's possible based on everything that went into putting down grass fields for the World Cup in each stadium. At this point, it comes down to the NFL making it a priority and choosing to invest in us as players because our bodies are our business, which they get to capitalize on. A lot of sense being made there from Kittle.
Yeah, but sorry, George. These stadiums just don't all house football games every week. We just don't make all the money on football games. Yeah. We got to have concerts. We've got to have rodeo. We've got to have monster trucks. We've got to have all things going on. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Jerry and Steven keep on saying that there's no evidence that the turf fields are more dangerous. So I think step one is proving that they're wrong unequivocally.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the right word? Yeah. Yeah, and then you got to get through the money part of it.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if that's – you can put that rabbit back in the hat, to steal a phrase from Jason Witten, because these stadiums are built for multi-use,
right.
Like Brian was saying.
Yeah.
You know.
That's the whole idea, the taxpayers paying for it.
Yeah.
That we're going to get a benefit that Oasis is going to have an 80,000 seats show.
I think maybe they could go after this. It like, can we get compensated for the injuries? Can we get better health care on the other side of it if we do have those injuries? Because I don't think you're going to get the teams to give up the added revenue streams.
No, there's no
way.
But
maybe there's a way you could get compensated for your injury risk a little bit more. Maybe there's a compromise in there somewhere.
They did a beautiful job in that field, though.
It looks so good.
I'll tell you that, SoFi Stadium last night. But did you notice the players slipping all over the place late in that game?
Their grass isn't good. Apparently they've had issues with the dirt being too hard, so the grass on top of the hard dirt is making it a little slicker.
I was wondering if it had to do with the fact that sometimes with the moisture in the air, you know, a little bit with the that maybe the grass, because it happens.
I think we have the best grass right now.
Yeah,
in the World Cup,
it looks amazing. So good, dude.
It does. It looks fantastic.
Our guys did a great job. Our whole staff. I think the guy. God, I think I'm wrong. This guy might be a Texas A&M guy. Might be from their school. Yeah.
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 I guess they had to raise the floor like 5 feet or 8 feet or something to build everything in there. So it's really not possible for this same alignment to just happen in a football game because the sidelines are totally different. The floor suites are gone. You know, I think it's up above that.
Right. So that, I mean, then it's going to cut into revenue as well, which I'm sure that the Cowboys would be like, no, we're not going to sell our ground suites there. So, yeah, it's.
They made a lot of money on this.
Hell yeah, they have. And I get where Kittle's coming from. And there's a part of me that's like, you know, the NFL, you want to push player safety. You want to pretend that matters to you. And I've often said I think it's the most hypocritical lie that they tell.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, now you're going to play games on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. We're going to have a game on every night of the week. That's not good. The quick turnarounds for these players playing on a short week. This grass field stuff is another element of it, but it does come down to the dollars and cents. And clearly, I think that these teams would lose out on money if they went to the natural grass. And some of them, to your point, Gavin, maybe it's not even possible. Maybe it's not feasible for the Cowboys to actually do it based on how, you know, the AT&T Stadium is laid out.
They have better luck finding a new artificial surface that doesn't get them hurt. You know, maybe that's where the research should go, but you know, you feel bad for the players that are having to go through this risk. They are rewarded quite handsomely to take on that injury risk. I'd rather risk that than like boxer CTE head trauma.
Agreed.
You know?
All right, let's go to the Green Light podcast. And this was Matthew Stafford who jumped on. He talked about a variety of stuff with Chris Long, former NFL player, but he got some good advice from Drew Brees, who played until he was 41. Stafford now is getting up there. You know, he's late 30s, and here was Stafford talking about the Brees advice.
Was there anything that Brady or Brees told you that you found a lot of value in, even as a 38-year-old?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that surprised me was I was talking to Drew. This was before last season. He was like, how old are you again? I was like, I'm 37. He was like, you might have your best 5 years of your career coming up, you know? Yeah. And I was like, you know, I never really thought about it that way. You're taught as a player in this league, it's a young man's game, and the older you get, you're just kind of doing everything you can to try to stay up to par with everybody else. And Drew saying that kind of lit a fire under me, and you know, gives you a little bit of belief that maybe an old guy can still go out there and spin it around a little bit.
Does it make you feel a little bit better about, like, we've talked a lot about this 3-year Dak window. But Dak's, maybe he's got more football left in him than we're giving him credit for here. If these quarterbacks are now going to start to have this type of success later in their careers, obviously your body needs to hold up. And Dak and Stafford's game's very different. Stafford's always been the type of quarterback. His arm talent is elite, and it has been for the last however long he's been playing. He can make throws that Dak just physically is not capable of making and winning from within the pocket. But I think Dak's taken great strides with his accuracy, being able to hit targets on the move, winning within the pocket. I thought his footwork in the pocket this past year was a big reason why he really elevated his game. And maybe that just starts to get better and better with age. I mean, unfortunately for Romo, it seemed like it had clicked for him, you know, that 2014 season. And mentally, like the game, he was at his best. His body just broke down. But if the body works with you here, maybe these quarterbacks are starting to age like fine wines. You're seeing him play better towards the twilight of their careers.
Man, that would be exciting if Dak can. I think his situation is significantly different because of the traumatic injury that he had to his lower leg. And since then, he's been much more injury prone with the hamstring, the calf, the shoulder. It feels like the posterior chain,
yeah,
to take a phrase from Duke Manyweather,
that's him,
has been negatively impacted. And it's not smooth and pliable or malleable anymore.
Not malleable.
There we go again.
There's a pretty big hitch in that whole deal. That's the chain of muscles from your heels to the top of your back, or okay, your the bottom of your neck, you know, and all those things kind of, they work together to bring this energy from the ground up, and then it explodes out of a quarterback's finger, or, you know, however you want to use it. A tackle punches out of his hands, and all of it comes from that posterior chain from the ground up. I think with Dak, his was altered in a way that makes injuries more likely for him and is probably going to have age drag him down a little bit sooner. Walchuk, okay, hate that you make me bring this stuff up.
I know, I'm sorry. But hey, you know what?
Guy.
I know it is. I know he's your guy. But it worked out for Stafford. He just won an MVP. He's looking like Prisco just has him as the number one player or number two player, right behind Myles Garrett, his new teammate, top quarterback in all of football. So maybe there's a chance. All right, Eric, get excited. As one that is a lover of rom-coms, the Bears and Hallmark are teaming up to produce Christmas movie, Holiday Touchdown, a Bears love story. This is going to be amazing. Bears coach Ben Johnson and tight end Colston Loveland delivered the news on social media that they are teaming up. It is Holiday Touchdown, a Bears love story, kicking off Hallmark's Countdown to Christmas. This is going to be filmed entirely at locations in and around Chicago. The cast will be announced at a later date.
Yay!
Yeah. Now, this follows a trend. We've got Kansas City.
Is this a gay couple?
It might be Caleb Williams dating a dude.
Well, it's not going to be Caleb.
Is it not?
Is it maybe somebody portraying him?
The poster
is Caleb
Williams.
I don't think Ben Johnson would be loving this.
And Ben Johnson holding hands.
Really?
Yeah. As one. Together. As a couple.
Is this like a
I really don't know
crave?
What I don't
is
know what it's going to be centered around. NFL.com's got this. Now, they just did the love story with the Chiefs, and it was kind of like a playoff Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. Then they did the Bills, which was like Haley Steinfeld and Josh Allen. I don't know what they're going for with the Bears, but the Bears are going to be the next team in line.
Are they
going
to have Boozy as the antagonist?
Maybe.
Thongs, man.
Thongs.
In a man's butt.
With a thong in his ass. It's unbelievable.
This is crazy because last year I was more pro Caleb Williams than everybody, but this year I think I'm more down on Caleb Williams than everybody because the pendulum swung so far.
Yeah, flip script.
They're talking about him maybe being a top five quarterback.
You don't think he's got the ability?
With that coach.
Maybe.
He's super talented. He is. But he does make some. I mean, I thought that playoff game was the perfect example of the Caleb Williams experience.
Yeah.
Where it's like, holy, he makes some jaw dropping plays, then the interception he threw to end the game.
Did you see that USC, though?
Yeah. The highs and lows.
Yeah.
It's wild with him. I mean, it's very Jekyll and Hyde at times, but he is special talent wise. He is the closest thing, I think, in the league to Mahomes.
I want the quarterback that plays on time.
Yeah, well, he's very not that guy.
And then when the play breaks, he can't play on time.
No.
It's not sustainable.
No.
We'll see if it is at some point in the next couple years.
Yeah.
Okay, we got to run. What are we doing next here? We got news dump time, Chief?
Friday news dump featuring Tim McMahon's advice for the Mavs to ace the rest of the offseason next in the nation.
All right, welcome back, G-Bag Nation. Segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels are the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. And here's Eric Chiafalo with that news dump.
Yes, sir. Lots to get to here at the desk right after this.
You're rolling with the Newsbag Nation on 105.3 The Fan.
Okay, we have Tim McMahon, ESPN Mavericks man.
Oh, this is about to be good.
He has some tips, some advice on how the Mavericks could ace the rest of their offseason. We also have some sound of him talking about what he has heard about the new Mavs head coach, Dusty May. But he says the one move the Mavs should make, let's see, would we be on board with this? How about helping out an old friend, Luka Doncic, in Los Angeles?
I don't want to help
that
them out.
That kind of stunned me a little bit. I didn't like that. I don't like the way that reads. Says the Lakers have a desperate need for a lob-catching, rim-protecting big man, and are going to have a hard time addressing it in free agency because you have Jalen Duren from Detroit and you have Utah's Walker Kessler, and neither of those teams have any intentions of losing those guys as restricted free agents. So he notes Daniel Gafford and how the Mavs have explored trading him. They did before last season's trade deadline. Couldn't find a team willing to give up a first-round pick in return. So they tried to trade Gafford at the deadline. No first-round picks available, so they kept him. But he says if the Lakers are willing to part with their first-round pick in 2031 or 2033, the Mavs should be willing to let Gafford go, especially with Morris Johnson Jr. capable of taking his minutes.
Yeah, I get it. And I suppose you could make it worth my while if you really wanted to up the ante and make it an offer I couldn't refuse. But I'm heavily against the idea of trading anybody to the Lakers that's going to make that better. And I'll tell you what, not only does Luka make Gafford better offensively catching those lobs, but then he gets energized and he starts doing crazy things on the rebounds and defensively.
Yeah.
You know? You freeze your big man out of his offense, and it hurts him on the defensive side. You involve him. You feed that big man. He turns into a beast in the paint on the other end for you. Mm-hmm. I want nothing to do with the Luka-Gafford combination.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I think everything has to be with the idea in mind that we'll do everything in our power to make him miserable in L.A. for the next 2 years. Everything we can control. We don't want to be looking back in 2028 and saying, well, maybe Luka would have wanted to leave, but he's doing great with Gafford.
Yeah, I wonder how much thinking in those walls is holding out hope that Luka could make a return. I wonder how much they're actually considering that in any type of trade scenarios.
I mean, I know Mavs fans are, but now you've got a completely new front office. So, I mean, like maybe Michael Finley is like, hey, guys, just so you know, Lucas still loves it here. But with Masai and Schmitz and now Dusty May, I don't know what they're thinking on that would be.
Help me!
That's what Lucas saying right now. I mean, it could get really chaotic for the Lakers if they can't figure something out with Luka. And it would be weird to feel like you're giving them the assist here. Nah. Like just a first round pick, and we're talking about 5 years from now, 20, I'm getting 30, that first round pick.
No.
Or 7 years from now.
No. Yeah, I mean, I like what you had previously said about there's a tax. Like if you're making any deal with the Lakers, they're overpaying. Sorry. You look, we gave you a bargain on the Luka trade, okay, with the previous nut job that was here. We're not doing this crap again. And we're certainly not keep helping a team in your own conference get better with your ex-lover.
I wonder if they consider how much goodwill they've built with the fan base over the last 12 months and if a trade with the Lakers would plunge them back into the fan base having to re-experience that trauma.
So I guess we all agree to disagree with Tim McMahon.
Yeah,
on
sorry,
how they,
Tim.
How they can ace the offseason by giving Luka more help. lessening your chances of a Luka return, and what you get in return is something that you'll discover in a half decade.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. We're not going to go help out our ex-wife.
I think we're good here.
New dude, a bigger schvanz.
I'd rather keep him and imagine Kyrie throwing him lobs over the next couple of years.
Yeah,
and then he gets to play with Luka again.
Perfect.
When Luka comes home. All right, so we will get Tim McMahon back in our good graces after he was on with the D Magazine podcast, and he had this to say about what he's heard about new Mavs head coach Dusty May.
People who I talk to that know Dusty May well, they all rave about his basketball IQ, but they say his EQ is just as high. Mm-hmm. You know, he has a reputation as a dude who is outstanding at creating relationships with players. And I think there's a lot of coaches who are liked by players, and that's not that important. To be respected is much more important. In my understanding, he's both of those things. He creates the kind of relationships with players where he can maximize their potential. And that's a big part of his reputation for being outstanding at player development, in addition to, you know, the more X's and O's aspects of the job.
Okay, so I mean that's quite the ringing endorsement right there from Tim McMahon and what he's heard about Dusty May. I think we're all pretty excited about this. This is going to be something that is going to be a lot of fun. It's a bit experimental, taking a guy from college, but I'm going to lean confident here in terms of Dusty May, and even with the draft picks and just like the way they're building this thing, I like the direction it's headed.
Yeah, I think when it comes to roster construction, the chemistry vibes component, and you know, then coaching the actual tactics of the game, college coaching has become more like NBA coaching than it ever has. So I feel more confident in a smooth transition than I would in other situations where it was about recruiting guys and you get them for, you know, 3 or 4 years. Just the things were so different. But I do think Dusty May is one of those coaches that are in college in today's dynamics that is well-equipped to come in here. I mean, I'm excited. I'm expecting massive success with him.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. The boys this morning were asking, is it an overreaction to say the Mavericks would get to a finals quicker than the rest of, like, we'll say the Rangers and the Cowboys?
Well, does the NFC Championship game count? Because then the answer would be no.
Yeah, I know you got your Cowboys bold prediction going to the NFC Championship game this year, but I would actually bet on the Mavericks over the Rangers and the Cowboys right now in terms of getting to a championship, because you just see how it's been it's such big turnover of who's in the finals in the NBA now over the last like 8 or 9 seasons, and you have Cooper Flagg.
Yeah,
and then I'm a believer in Dusty May. So,
yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, if we're not including the stars, then yes, absolutely.
Snap the Cooper.
Yeah, I think there's 4 teams that would beat you in the playoffs if you're the Cowboys, and I don't foresee that changing. Yeah, I mean, Cooper's got to have a big jump in year two.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think it would be something that would happen this year, but I think in the next 2 to 3 years, if you told me the Mavericks were in the Western Conference Finals with a chance to go to the NBA Finals, I would say yes, I could absolutely see that happening.
Unfortunately, it's not the Rangers. Even though they're only a game and a half out, maybe we should have more confidence in them. But maybe we'll ask Eric that here.
I just don't know if the Rangers are malleable enough, you know, to get it done. The 214, Tony, what is EQ? Emotional intelligence. You have the IQ, how smart you are. The EQ, which Dusty May is being praised for, is the emotional intelligence, being able to interact with people and manage them and that whole deal. So that's what that means. Now, you know, one thing we haven't really talked about this week, but it's...
That was always the equalizer for me. You know, if you go back in the car stereo days, the EQ, was adjusting the bass and the mids and the trebles.
So what
Where's
do you...
Where's the Q in the emotional intelligence?
How about... I think it's...
You know,
it's a playoff IQ.
Well, it's like...
Yeah, I understand that.
So what's the Q?
Yeah, there is no Q.
Quotient.
Yeah.
The quotient.
It's the quotient.
It goes
Einstein.
Without saying. Thanks a lot, Albert.
How about Mike Inouye, the T-Wolves assistant coach, taking the head coaching job in Portland for a 1-year deal with team options for years 2 and 3?
That's that new ownership group.
Yes, it's the cheapest owner in all of sports right now. He takes the cake. I think he's proud of it as well. But
just won a Stanley Cup.
This is crazy.
Players Association, or the coaches association's ticked off at them.
They are, because this could set a new precedent. Like, look, man, you got guys that are willing to take 1 year deals with team options in year two and three. Like, usually you're talking about a 4 or 5 year deal, and you're guaranteed. Like, the moment you become a head coach, you're a made man. You're getting $40-50 million over the next 4 or 5 years.
You know, the entire time since Tom Dundon bought the team, I've been like, that's fine. You know, it was a mom-and-pop operation. He has stuff to clean up. He runs a very tight ship. He's a shrewd businessman. More power to him, you know, if he's got to do all these things to make it a better-run organization. But the other day he said, I need the taxpayers to pay for all the renovations for this arena.
Yeah.
Because I am taking on a huge financial risk of paying the added state taxes inside this the state government.
What is that?
So for the first time, I feel like maybe he's trying to relocate that team.
Oh, yeah. That's usually the first step, right?
Yeah. Like, I'm trying to piss off everybody.
Yeah.
And I'm going to hold you hostage for $600 million in an economically depressed region. Goodness. And if you don't do that, I'm gonna tell you that maybe I could have a better business proposition in a different city. You kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it seems like to me.
But a 1 year deal for a head coach, that is pretty crazy stuff.
The day that happens, maybe they go to Vegas or something, my allegiance would go from 50-50 Blazers Mavs to 100% Mavs. That's what's on the line for me.
Okay, is there anything funnier than the FIFA World Cup having their game in Seattle tonight at Lumen Field being their pride match, and the two teams are Egypt versus Iran?
Oh, wow.
They're objecting to it.
They are.
Yeah, there's no way they're...
They are not happy. Both countries are pretty ticked with FIFA. I guess they determined because Seattle is having their pride parade this weekend. So when they discovered that they were going to be a host city, they're like, okay, this is when we're going to have our pride match. They didn't know in that moment that it was going to be Egypt versus Iran. So both countries are absolutely pissed off, and they're trying to tell FIFA,
will it be like, triggering
we don't want to see any... I have no idea when it comes. I have no idea. I just know the powers that be in each country are not pleased with FIFA right now.
We helicoptered every day after practice.
They don't want to see a rainbow flag anywhere. Okay. So that is pretty amazing the way that all unfolded. So we'll see if there's any chaos with that game tonight. I did.
Ray Davis wants to see if any of those guys have baseball talent.
Yeah. Right up my alley, boys. Come on down.
I did love to see the video of the Mexico fan celebrating advancing in the World Cup by dunking his head in a cotton candy machine. Did you guys see that?
Yes, pretty incredible.
You can get cotton candy wrapped around your entire amazing dome if you want to, if you just hover it over that little machine they got. It is a fantastic video.
The scalp.
And I was educated on the fact that the rest of the world outside of America calls the wave, the sports wave, you know what they call it? They call it the Mexican wave.
Oh, no.
Because they think it was
invented in Mexico.
It was basically invented by Mexico, even though it was in the 70s and early 80s. It was in Seattle, Oakland. But it was the 1986 FIFA World Cup in Mexico where it became popular.
Okay.
And so around the world, they call it the Mexican wave.
Mm. Shoot, yeah, boy.
I heard the announcers talking about that. I thought they were confusing it for some reason.
No, they nailed it. We were
like,
confused.
Yeah.
Well, we invented it.
We invented it, but Mexico's getting credit for it.
Oh, come on.
Right. Same with the margarita.
We'll get Eric Nadell's thoughts on this and more coming up next year. It's the G-Bag Nation and the Fan. Thank you very much, Lucius, and happy Friday to all involved. There will be no what you drinking, what you thinking this evening because Rangers baseball is coming up at 5:30. Proper round tripper at 5 o'clock. We'll chuckle, you know, fill you in on what you need to know with Rangers Blue Jays coming up pregame at 5:30. Eric Nadell joins you now here on The Fan. Brought to you by Kubota and brought to you by TXU Energy. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing, you know, good. After that third inning last night and a nice victory to start things off in Toronto, you know, and Corey Seager back. What do you think? Can he be a shot in the arm here this weekend and, you know, for the rest of the season?
That's a good question. You know, he wasn't going real well when he got hurt, and You know, he didn't look so great last night, first game back. He's not playing tonight, which was scheduled all along with Patrick Corbin, you know, a lefty pitching for Toronto and a guy that Corey has struggled against in the past. He'll play the next 2 days. That's the plan anyway. So we'll find out. But the Rangers certainly need him. You know, they seem to click on two or three cylinders at a time. And, you know, now that they've got Langford going well and Peterson going well, they don't have Young and Duran going well anymore. It's crazy. Nicky Lopez is hitting now. But, you know, they've never this year been hitting on more than two or three cylinders at one time.
What's your read on why they're holding Seager out?
I really think they're just trying to be careful on getting him back. And, you know, they weren't going to play him all four games this weekend. So why not sit him in the one game where the other team starting a lefty? Gives you a chance to get Foscue into the lineup against the lefty, and makes a lot of sense to me. You know, he hasn't hit. It would be different if he had hit Corbin well in the past, but he hasn't. John Peterson isn't playing tonight either because of the left-hander on the mound for Toronto.
Very interesting. You know, I thought going 1-for-3 and working two walks, maybe, you know, it's like, hey, he's trying a more patient approach at the plate, but you didn't like what you saw from him last night, huh?
No, he's just kind of easing back into it. You know, I don't think you can pass any judgments, but I certainly wouldn't stick him in there tonight against a lefty that he has had a really hard time against in the past.
Eric, what do you think about the American League this year as a whole? I mean, we got a four-way tie right now with all sub-500 teams for the third and final playoff spot. It's just such a jumbled mess. I mean, is this good for the sport, just having everybody that's so mediocre still with a chance in competing nearing the deadline?
Well, you know, the mediocrity is coming in large part from the fact that the National League is still kicking butt against the American League. I saw the figures today. The National League has won 56% of the interleague games. If you just kind of worked that out, did the math on a 162-game season, that would be a record of 90-72.
Wow.
So the National League would be a guaranteed playoff team, probably a division winner, if that was the league that they were playing in. And that's why all these American League teams are under 500 and all these National League teams are over 500, because the staggering differential in interleague play just continues. You know, early in the year, we thought it was a statistical aberration, but apparently it's not. It just keeps on going.
Eric, with the dominance of Jacob Latz this year, one, can you imagine a world where he's not an all-star? But two, do you think this is the official role for him sort of moving forward, being in the closer role?
I think so. He's shown that he can handle it, and he's got the mentality for it, you know, which a lot of guys don't. You know, he's got the slow heartbeat. As far as the all-star game, man, people need to keep in mind that, you know, he's not the only relief pitcher with an earned run average under two. You know, there are guys who are not among the save leaders who you can make a case for with regard to Latz. Now, personally, I favor Latz because of his four-out saves and his six-out saves. But that's not necessarily, you know, what's going to come into play when the league starts deciding, well, we've got to have a representative from this team and we've got to have a representative from that team. In the case of the Rangers, it's probably going to come down to that. They're going to have a representative from the Rangers. And who's it going to be? It's either going to be Latz or Duran or Young. Now, it's possible that Duran will finish second in the player voting behind Ernie Clement. And if he does, he's on the team. But Travis Bazzana of Cleveland, you know, who's a rookie sensation and the former number one pick overall in the draft, is probably much better known to people than Duran is. So I would be surprised if Bazzana did not win the player vote as the second baseman. I hope I'm wrong. You know, if Zeke wins that vote, he's on the team, and then Latz probably is not on the team, because I don't think they would give the Rangers a second representative when there are other teams, you know, needing to, you know, have a representative. And I'd be very surprised if Latz is voted on by the players as one of the three relievers. He could be. I think he's now in the top five in saves. But, you know, you've got Chapman, who's almost automatic. You've got Smith from Cleveland, who's got over 20 saves. You've got Bednar from the Yankees, who's got 16 or 17 saves. You know, there are a lot of guys, like Louis Varland from Toronto, having an incredible year. So, you know, if Zeke happens to get voted on as the second baseman, I'd be surprised if Lass makes the team.
Eric Nadel crushing it here with you on the Fan Rangers game day pregame coming up at 5:30. How do we get Evaldi back to being an all-star form?
Boy, I wish I knew, because, you know, nothing that he's had this year has been really that reliable. For a while, it looked like the splitter was. You know, he was on that good little stretch, and he was throwing the splitter, you know, about 40% of the time, a much higher percentage than he had before. But his fastball is getting so crushed that it's tough to win, you know, when your fastball is getting hit as hard as his is, and you're only throwing it, what, 20, 22% of the time, something like that. He needs to get back to getting that splitter where he's not making any mistakes with it. Because the thing with Nathan, he's around the strike zone so much. You know, when he makes mistakes, they tend to be toward the middle of the strike zone. And that's something that he just wasn't doing last year. Everything was on the corners or just off the corners. That hasn't been the case so far. You know, when you get a guy who's 37, 38 years old, and you're trying to figure out how to straighten him out, I don't know, he's probably got a better idea than anybody else how to do that.
How do you expect him to do against this Toronto lineup?
They're a good team, you know, and they've got some of their injured guys back. He seems to come up big, and, you know, I think that the Rangers are probably very motivated against Toronto. You know, they were a World Series team last year, and, you know, I would be surprised if he didn't have a really good game tonight.
Eric Nadel here with you on the Fan. The four teams in the West separated by a game and a half. Should any of them look at themselves as strong contenders? They got to be big buyers here with the deadline coming up. And specifically, what are you expecting here 5 weeks out for the Rangers?
It's too early to tell. You know, it really is. It could go either way. You know, the chances of the Rangers dropping out of contention, I don't think are that great. You know, given the fact that it doesn't look like anybody's going to run away with the second or third wild card spot. So I'd be really surprised if the Rangers get into selling mode. It might be the best thing for the long-term future of the organization, but if they have a chance to win, I don't believe these owners and this front office are going to concede the season for the sake of rebuilding the farm system, you know, and looking ahead 2 or 3 years. I'd be really surprised. So I think the Rangers are going to be buyers. To what extent they're buyers, you know, depends on, I think, whether or not they get their record over 500 by the time the trading deadline rolls around. If they're over 500, I could see them making some major moves.
Do you think labor uncertainty plays into a trade deadline strategy at all for Ray?
I don't know. I guess it comes down to an individual player thing, you know, on whether you think that, you know, the season will be interrupted next year or the season might not happen at all. And you're talking about trading guys on long-term contracts or trading four guys on long-term contracts. I think it'll be a consideration. Taking on additional salary, though, is definitely a consideration. I think all of the owners are very cognizant of that, and they're really not willing to go ahead and take on a lot of extra payroll when they're not sure what their whole financial situation is going to look like next year.
So is there a feeling like a work stoppage could happen?
I think the feeling is that the work stoppage will happen, and it's just a matter of how long it'll go. You know, that seems to be the general feeling around baseball. And on the other hand, there are people who say there's no way the teams would let that happen. They're doing too well. Or there's no way the players, given that the owners are now offering, you know, minimum salaries of $1 million and, you know, a way to really help the rank and file, the players who aren't the big stars, you know, those are the guys who can't really afford to miss games next year. And if the rank and file is willing to stand up to the Bryce Harpers and the Matt Scherzers of the world, you know, who want to see no salary cap and want to see $40 million salaries continue, if the rank and file guys are willing to stand up to those guys, I think we'll get a settlement and we'll get one, you know, fairly fast, and the season will be saved in its entirety. But it's going to take some of the younger players to say, look, the current system favors and serves the highest paid players. It does not serve the bottom 60 or 70% of players. And I think the players, as time goes on and they face the reality of losing games to a strike or a lockout, I think they're going to come around to realizing that.
Eric, every time I watch these World Cup matches, I think of you and how much you would love to pronounce all these guys' names. Like, they would just roll off your tongue like no tomorrow.
Well, yeah. I don't know. Maybe the Spanish ones would, but once we're getting into some of the other countries, I'm not so sure.
Oh, nobody does better with hard names than you. Seriously. I mean, I love it when you – it's just natural for you. You've been at this so long, though. Is it a practice thing? How do you go about studying hard names?
I guess it's all the voice and diction that I took. First in a program that I took when I was in high school, I went to Northwestern University for a summer and took voice and diction. Then I took voice and diction in college. And then I had a voice teacher when I first got the Rangers job because I sounded really young and I thought it was important to, try and sound a little bit older. Uh-huh. And diction and articulation was an important part of that. They gave me all these exercises to do so that you could properly manipulate your tongue and your teeth, to say these complicated words. It's funny. This came up yesterday. There's a band that I love, and I'm going to see them in Cleveland on Saturday night. I'm off this weekend, so I'm going to Cleveland a day early to see this band from New Zealand. They're called the Beths, like the word Beth, the name Beth with an S at the end.
Beth.
It's Beths. The Beths.
Okay.
And a friend of mine was trying to tell Alexa to play the Beths. And Alexa kept saying, playing best, or playing Beths. And Alexa could not comprehend the word Beths as my friend was trying to pronounce it. So I tried it, and on the first try, Alexa said, now playing the Beths.
Look at that.
That's what I'm talking about.
Eric.
Think about it. Make your tongue do that thing between your teeth, and then get to the S sound as quickly as you have to get to it. It's a difficult word to say.
Yeah. We'll leave that up to the Hall of Fame pipes of one Eric Nadel. But before we let you go, sir, we'd love to also know what you're drinking and thinking.
Actually, what I'm drinking is this kind of disgusting powder that a friend of mine recommended to me called Moringa Leaf Powder. It's supposed to contribute to graceful aging and longevity. Mm-hmm. And people drink it as a tea. And it tastes very much like I would imagine freshly mown grass would taste if you put it in a tea. So
gross.
I've been mixing it in with green tea, and it doesn't foul up the taste of it all that much. But if you want to check it out, it's Moringa. If people who are very health conscious, want to look up one more supplement they can possibly take, try the Moringa leaf powder. But don't drink it straight. It's disgusting. Oof.
Thanks, man. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the Beths.
Thanks a lot.
There he goes. Eric Nadel with you. Fridays at 4:40 here on The Fan. We're coming back with that round tripper, Wolchuk.
We got all-star voting results and firings across Major League Baseball.
Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.